Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We're not talking about Lance Armstrong on today's show. We will as the week goes on. But we have a question about the Lance Armstrong confession, I guess you would call it, to Oprah on our Facebook page. If you're paying attention, why does Lance Armstrong's admission matter to you? Is it more than just a celebrity story? So visit our Facebook page and leave your thoughts. That's facebook.com/BrianLehrerWNYC. facebook.com/BrianLehrerWNYC to tell us why the Lance Armstrong admission about doping to Oprah matters to you. Is it more than just a celebrity story? Why are you paying attention to this if you are? And then we'll talk about it on the air in the coming days. Now, in December, Mayor Bloomberg announced that the number of murders in New York City in 2012 was the lowest ever recorded at 414. Compare that to 1990, when there were over 2,200 murders, and you can see why the mayor and many New Yorkers were so pleased. There have been many politicians, former Mayor Rudy Giuliani among them, who have made their careers on promises to reduce violent crime. But what if part of it isn't really up to policy? What if it was up to lead, and specifically the lead in gasoline? And what if crime rates were still up to lead, even though it isn't in gasoline anymore? My next guest's recent article in Mother Jones about a possible connection between violent crime and exposure to lead is getting a lot of attention. Kevin Drum joins us now to talk about his article. Hi, Kevin. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
And there are so many theories about the decrease in violent crime. This one points to a molecule, tetraethyl lead, the one that was added to gasoline starting in the 1920s. Walk us through the connection.
Sure. You know, we've known for a long time that exposure to lead in small children affects things like IQ and learning disabilities and how they do in school, that sort of thing. But more recently, there's been a new line of research showing that it's worse than we think. It turns out that lead also affects parts of the brain in the prefrontal cortex that have the effect of increasing aggression. So you expose small children to lead, 20 years later they're going to be more violent, more aggressive than they otherwise would be. So here's what happened. Is after World War II, we all went on a car buying binge, and we all fill up our cars with leaded gasoline. And so small children were exposed to lead in greater and greater quantities. And that affected their brains. And 20 years later, when those children grew up, we ended up with a huge crime wave starting in the mid-60s through the 70s and through the 80s. Now, we started taking lead out of gasoline in 1975. So lead content went down, down, down over the next 20 years. And sure enough, if you go out about 20 years from there, starting in the early 90s, crime started to drop too. And it has been dropping very dramatically ever since about 1991, especially in big cities where lead where lead was the worst. As you mentioned, New York City in particular has seen violent crime drop by 75% since 1991.
But there are so many other things that happened in that time period, too. Family breakdown, the crack epidemic, the increasing availability of high-powered weapons, as the country is talking a lot about today. So how do you separate out lead as a variable from everything else that's been going on in America for 70 years?
Well, what you need to do is take a look at a couple of things. First of all those things you mentioned and more, I mean, things like race and poverty and culture and so forth, all of those things have an effect on crime. It's a complex subject. But you need to take a look at those things and ask yourself whether they can explain not just sort of kind of the baseline level of crime, whether it's going up or down a little bit here and there, but can they explain a gigantic increase in crime in the 70s and 80s and then an equally gigantic decrease? And you know, really they can't. You know, you take a look at the crack epidemic. That was one decade. That doesn't explain why crime was going up in the 60s and 70s. You take a look at the breakdown of families. You know, you might say that that was a problem that started in the 60s, and maybe you might think that it contributed to the increase in crime. But families haven't been getting back together over the last 20 years, right? You look at poverty. It didn't go way up, and then we suddenly solved poverty. So a lot of those things that you're talking about, they don't really make sense as explanations for a, you know, as you say, a 60-70-year cycle of crime.
Well, you're talking about the reasons why crime is going down, really, and there are so many theories about that, from better policing to urban communities just getting sick of the crack epidemics in their midst and the violence in their midst and just, you know, getting it together as communities. We had a guest the other day talking about that. Freakonomics suggests that it might even be Roe versus Wade because there are so many fewer unwanted children being born today. And unwanted children are more likely to grow up to become criminals. So I'm just saying that's hard to sort out, right?
It is. If you, you know, one thing to keep in mind, especially in New York City, you know, I have a lot of respect for Bill Bratton and what he did in New York City. And, of course, you know, I live near Los Angeles, and Bratton came to Los Angeles and did some good work here as well. But, you know, violent crime started to go down in New York City 4 years before Bratton and Giuliani took charge. So it was already on its way down when they started. And what's more, it's not just New York City. You know, crime went down in Baltimore, in Atlanta, in Denver, in Seattle. It went down everywhere. And it went down in places where they weren't using the broken windows theory, and they really didn't start community policing. So you really have to explain why crime went down everywhere, not just in New York City.
So you've got the poisoned windows theory. In March of last year, we had the author Sam Harris on the show to talk about his book Free Will, in which he argues that there's no such thing. I want to play a clip from that interview because he talks about the role of free will in the criminal justice system.
The moment you look closely at the causes of human action and we begin to understand them more and more clearly at the level of the brain, it begins to seem exculpatory in a way. So, for instance, when we find a murderer has committed a murder, but when upon scanning his brain, we find that he has a brain tumor in the relevant area that would explain his violent impulses, well, that's completely exculpatory. We then look at him as someone who's just a victim of bad biology.
So we remembered that clip from Sam Harris because it seems to go right to your premise. So if there are a lot of people who have been incarcerated for violent crimes who have as one factor this underlying brain condition caused by childhood exposure to lead, do you think that should be used in court as an exculpatory factor?
Well, that's a legal question that I probably can't address. My guess is no. I mean, you know, the tragedy of all this is really hard to overstate. You know, we spent decades unwittingly poisoning our children in ways that would make them more aggressive, more violent. And then they became more aggressive and more violent when they grew up. And what happened then was they committed crimes and we started throwing them in prison. We had a huge prison building binge in the 70s and 80s. We quadrupled the number of prison cells that we had over that time.
Another reason that many people say crime went down during that period, they just locked up more criminals for longer periods of time.
That's probably backwards. It's not that locking up people caused crime to go down. It's the fact that we had more crime caused us to build more prisons.
Mm-hmm. So what, if anything, remains to be done on this? Mostly we've been talking about an interpretation of history, why crime went up, why crime went down. But I gather that in your article you conclude this is actually not yet a closed issue, even though there's no more lead in gasoline.
That's right. No, it's not quite. Gasoline lead was banned in 1995. Lead in paint was finally completely banned in 1978. But it's still around. Lead paint is still around in old housing stock, and it's especially dangerous in window frames because the way that kids ingest lead, it's not eating lead paint chips. It's mostly through dust. And window frames where you're opening and closing windows a lot will flake off old lead paint, create lead dust in the house, and kids will track it around, get it on their hands, and then, you know, lick their hands and get it in that way. Gasoline lead, it turns out all that lead that we spewed out of our tailpipes has to go somewhere, and where it went was into the soil. And whenever the weather dries up, all of that lead gets kicked back up out of the soil, and, you know, the kids can ingest it yet again. And so what we ought to be doing is you know, cleaning up the window frames at least, and trying to clean up the worst parts, the worst areas that have the highest concentrations of lead in the soil, especially places where kids congregate. So, you know, playgrounds, schoolyards, places like that.
And I hate to even raise this because the urban agriculture movement is such a cool thing. But a few years ago, a study of eggs from chickens raised in New York City in neighborhood gardens found some detectable amounts of lead, unlike store-bought eggs. And I wonder if there's a concern that urban agriculture and that movement is exposing us to lead.
There is. I can't say how big a concern it is, but there's no question that if you grow plants in soil infested with lead, the lead does leach into the plants. We really ought to be cleaning up the soil first and then planting our gardens.
So you call for a major investment even today in lead remediation. We've got 30 seconds left. What do you want to see done?
Well, the first thing I'd like to see done, I mean, that costs a lot of money. I understand that's not going to happen immediately based on a magazine article. What I'd like to see at the very least is the amount of money spent to do, you know, a real serious, rigorous piece of research to show what it would cost to clean up the lead, and on a scientific basis, what the benefits would be, because I think they'd probably be enormous.
Kevin Drum, his article on lead getting a lot of attention in Mother Jones. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, libraries in the digital age. Are the city's libraries keeping up? Stay tuned.